Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, Badger fans, and welcome to another edition of Bucky's Fifth Podcast. As always, Tyler Hunt and Matt Bells here covering everything Wisconsin athletics. On today's show, we've got a similar outline, a recap of all three of the sports going on right now in terms of what's got some happenings. Of course, volleyball survived a nail biter in the Elite Eight to advance to the Final Four, a game that was back and forth. As just a casual observer of the volleyball team, my heart was racing watching that entire game. For Florida, it was, a tough loss, but just an incredible volleyball game back and forth, and the Badgers advanced to Final Four. So we'll talk about that a little bit. We've got some spring practice updates to get to, some groups have talked to the media, some position groups that are standing out, and some players that are standing out. And then we've got some basketball talk at the end. So a little bit of recap, similar to what we've done in the past couple weeks of all three sports that kind of have the big news and waves going on right now. Matt, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Yeah, busy morning. But that game yesterday night or yesterday afternoon was really intense, and it was a really fun match.
Yeah, let's get right into that, because I think, you know, as the number one Wisconsin volleyball blog, I think that's where we're required to start. You know, the Badgers survive a nail biter in five sets. The first time that they've gone to five sets all season, and I know they've played, of course, a condensed schedule. I believe just 18 games so far this year. Really, for them, it was back and forth. I think Wisconsin would say when sometimes they've looked like a well-oiled machine throughout the season, there's been a couple times here and there where they haven't looked their best. I would say last night was a time where they haven't looked their best, a little sloppy, just a little bit off. And you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know the ins and outs of volleyball, but it just seemed like to me, again, the casual observer, that sometimes the passing and the timing was just a bit off, and I have to imagine in volleyball that little bit of unsynchronization can put on that fifth set despite being down 2-3 points at one time. What did you make of that thrilling contest, and how was your heart rate throughout that one?
Yeah, it was crazy good match in terms of just every single or all five sets were really close and were fighting tooth and nail. It was like you mentioned, kind of uncharacteristic in terms of some of their outside hitters weren't hitting great or consistently. There was some unforced errors going on, but man, you look at what Haggerty did out there playing essentially the entire time. And helping lift the team in so many different ways. You saw her making plays in the back end as an outside hitter, just kind of playing everywhere. And that speaks volumes to kind of the leader that she is. And then Retke, who's obviously playing through that finger injury to finish off the game with that big block. It was fun. That Florida team is good, and they played probably their best match of the season. And Wisconsin definitely was not nearly as sharp, but it was nice to see that Wisconsin was still able to gut one out, use all that experience. Because you look at it, Hegarty obviously was great, but then you had so many other people contributing and being involved and helping out in so many different ways. In the back end, I thought that their defense was pretty great for most of it. Did a good job of trying to stop that, specifically Civita and Barnes. I thought they were great, but man, I just think they need to be more crisp going into a game against Texas, who's another really, really good team. And really, they're going to have to go back to the tape and just kind of see what they can clean up.
Yeah, I mean, really, that game was, you know, if you were watching it and you didn't have a fanhood from either side, it was just a great volleyball match that really neither team deserved to lose. Both teams, you know, it was just back and forth and really exciting. If you were a Wisconsin fan, it was a little nerve-wracking, but like you mentioned, the Badgers were able to really lean on their experience and their superstars at the end, you know, in Hegarty and Retke both really, you know, play. I mean, Hegarty was incredible the entire game, but that fifth set, she really seemed to put the team on her back. I mean, it's an old cliche in sports that you go to your star, you know, when things get tight. Wisconsin certainly did that, but I'm glad that you mentioned the rest of it, because, you know, some players struggle a little bit, but at the end they rallied. I think that's what makes this team really strong, is that they've got depth. They've got players that have played a lot of these type matches. And I think for Wisconsin, you know, thankfully coming away with a win, it also was a good test for them to not have their best game, you know, to be pushed to a fifth set for the first time, kind of feel what that's like this season. Now, obviously, a lot of these players have played, you know, normal seasons where they've got into those games. But this year for the Badgers, they really rolled through most of the teams they've played. I mean, this is the first really, you know, big major test where they were down in the fifth set. How was the team going to respond? And thankfully for the Badgers, they didn't get tight. They didn't get nervous. They were able to come back out and rally. So I think in a way that's a good test for them before getting to the Final Four. You're already going to be nerve-wracking, you know, a little bit in that contest just because of the stage that you're on. But to kind of get a little test in that Elite Eight, you know, beforehand is certainly going to be, I think, good for this team in the long run. And I'm excited to see what they can do against the Longhorns Thursday night, 8:30 on ESPN, for those of you wondering when and where that will be televised.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a fantastic contest, just because you look at it, and I think this was a nice wake-up call, because this Wisconsin volleyball team, even when we look back at the previous games in the tournament, they've kind of coasted through most of it. They didn't have to play some of the really tough teams in the Big Ten. They only had to play Minnesota, for example, once. They missed out on having to play a team like Penn State, Nebraska. So I think this is a really good push for them. And obviously you could see just how excited, how relieved they were after that, because it would have been a huge upset. And for them to kind of take care of business in that five-set thriller was awesome to see, especially when they were down 4 points at one point in that fifth set, and they kind of willed themselves back. And a lot of that was Hegarty. A lot of that was Retke. I mean, you can say that they have a lot of top players, but those two get a lot of the limelight. And I thought really to see the leadership at the end to kind of lift them up and say, hey, we're not going to fold here. We're not going to lose. What was a nice sight to see, as well as the relief after the game, that how pumped up and excited they were afterwards.
Yeah, after that block, just seeing them all run on the court was pretty special, you know, to go to the Final Four. And in any sport is got to be a thrilling sight. I know this team has, of course, been there before, but now to try and get over that hump will be something that everyone's going to have their eye on. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do Thursday night against Texas. So, of course, the winner of that will take on Kentucky or Washington, I believe, was the other team in the Final Four there. So should be some exciting matchups as the Final Four for college volleyball gets underway. But thankfully for the Badgers, they're moving on. Everyone can breathe a little bit a sigh of relief after what was a nail-biter back and forth. All right, let's move into some football talk now. We've got, of course, spring practice continuing on. There have been some reports of some players doing well in some positions. We've had a couple positions speak to the media a little bit. We'll start with inside linebackers. I know they you know, had a pretty strong conversation. There were some notes that I think was kind of funny in terms of Leo Chenal and Jack Sanborn. You know, Jack Sanborn essentially telling Leo Chenal sometimes to be a little bit more patient. You know, I thought that was funny because the guy just seems to be a guy that plays with his hair on fire. all the time. And I think that's some of the traits that make him special. But sometimes, as an inside linebacker, maybe you need to wait to make the play, like Jack Sanborn, you know, make the play in the hole that way. But what did you make of the comments from those of Bob Bostad and Schnall and all those guys in the inside linebacker room?
Yeah, I thought they were pretty transparent and shared quite a bit in that media availability session. I thought the noteworthy thing was basically saying that they want more depth. That was mentioned multiple times, and that's the need for that because they mentioned specifically, Chenal mentioned that in that Wake Forest game, after those first two drives, they were gassed. And that no-huddle approach that Wake Forest did kind of had them on their heels, and you could see that in the game, especially how they kept hitting those crossing routes, those quick hitters over the middle, right in front or behind of the linebackers, and so I think it's really important this spring to find some guys behind them. Mike Mascalunas has been banged up, hasn't really been able to go too much. Same thing with Malik Reed and Jordan Turner. But that Bob Bostad mentioned that they're guys that are kind of trending up. Take that for what it's worth. But really, they haven't been out there quite as much as you'd hope. So then you throw in that a lot of the conversation centered around Mumojong Mehta, a guy that we had mentioned was kind of at that make or break time because of those younger guys coming in, some of the other players. So I think that he's in a space now, fully healthy. It's pretty crazy, actually, to hear back to his 2020. But now that he's healthy, he's in a space that I think he gives them a fourth inside linebacker that they can trust. And then Tatum Graffs, another dude who has seemed to be getting involved more and more. Kind of you look at kind of his progression, and it's very similar to Mike Mascalunas as a guy who early in his career players are talking about as a walk-on to watch out for. He's now seeing some time on special teams, and now he's kind of in the thick of things to be in a potential rotation as a reserve, as well as his role in special teams. So I think overall it's good progress for some depth at the inside linebacker position. It's still a little worrisome that that both Malik Reed and Jordan Turner are a little banged up, because I think most folks were hoping to hear some more from their names as well, just because they were some pretty highly sought after recruits that folks are high on within the program and obviously people who are recruit Knicks.
Yeah, I think that the depth conversation was really the most important part. I mean, you look at there's a couple of positions on this Wisconsin football roster that have some really high quality starters, but behind them you're looking for the next guys to kind of progress in line. You know, there's kind of a mixed bag, a group that, you know, generally you like to have some sort of progression to see who's going to be that next player to step up. And right now the Badgers don't really quite have a clear answer on that in the inside linebacker room. You talk about Njong Mehta, you've talked about Tatum Grass. Of course, like you mentioned, Malik Reed and Jordan Turner are guys that you want to step up. Jake Chaney is a young player that I think could be pretty good, but, you know, of course, still young, still trying to grasp the playbook a little bit that way. So I think that depth part is going to be something that I don't know if we'll quite have answers from just spring practice, but, you know, as you get into fall, you get into that too deep with some of these guys being banged up, it's going to be a short window to really see some progression from those two. But when you talk about the top two and needing some depth behind them just to give them blows, I mean, those guys played a lot of snaps. They're going to play a lot of snaps, but you'd like to have 3-4 guys that you can rely on to work into a rotation. And I think for Bob Bostad right now, he's just kind of looking to get some answers from some of that group. I think all the physical traits are there for a lot of these guys. I know you mentioned, and Tatum Grass, he's really strong and progressing, just waiting to put it all together. I think that's kind of the same situation for a lot of these guys. And with Reed and Turner banged up, you're not being able to see where they're at and what they're doing. But hopefully they can get back out there and you can get some sort of, you know, maybe a muddy picture of where you're going to have in that 2-deep behind the likes of Sanborn and Schnall.
Yeah, I think UW is kind of tips their cap here in a lot of ways when they're doing these interviews. Normally in a spring or a fall camp setting, we go in there and you let UW Communications know who you want to talk to. Now it's more of, here is who you get to talk to. And primarily it's the guys who are going to play the most. You've noticed it's the players who are involved in getting the most reps. So you're looking at who is available to the media: Leo Chenal, Jack Sanborn, Mike Mascalunas, Tatum Grass, and Muma Jungmeta. That kind of tells you that those are their top five at that inside linebacker position. I would be surprised if that wasn't the case. I like that you mentioned, though, that Jake Taney, because he's a kid that they brought up on multiple occasions about how he has already grasped the playbook really well, which I think is a testament to how smart he is as a player and what he could bring to the table down the line. And so I think they're in a good space. You've got a couple more inside linebackers coming in that 2021 class as well. But in the end, you look at what Bob Bostead said about Chenal and Sanborn. He said, "My philosophy is I'm going to play them, and I want the absolute best players on the field, and I'm going to play them until I can't." So that tells you that most likely, while we have brought up this idea of depth and how Mascalunas was the only guy really spelling them in games last year, I think Tatum Grass saw a few snaps here or there. But in the end, it's going to be Chenal and Sanborn on the field 99% of the time outside of mop-up duty. So I think those two are really strong tandem, and the rest of it will shake itself out as practice continues to go on and really over the summer, because that's another possible time of development for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, it could be a lot worse. You could be looking for two starters and two backups and kind of looking at it that way, you know. It's not a bad problem to have, you know, two really strong starters, guys that could be all-conference players in Chenal and Sanborn, and then you're just looking for a couple guys to kind of take that next step up behind them. There's a lot of inside linebacker situations across the country where coaches would sign up for that probably tomorrow, just because you don't usually get, you know, two really strong starters and then a group that you believe in behind them just kind of waiting for them to step up. So it's definitely going to be an interesting one to watch for. You know, I think this group, like I said, has got a lot of talent. It's just time to see how they progress. And, you know, guys like Jake Chaney, you know, I remember when we had him on the podcast, he was very well spoken and seemed, you know, wise beyond his years as just a high school player. So I could see him being someone that really makes an impact. Some of those other guys, Grass, Njung Mehta, all those guys have talent. It's just time to see where they develop. But I like that you mentioned that it could just really shake itself out. You know, you're in a good position right now as starters. You just need to find someone to maybe give them a spell and a blow, and someone that you feel confident as is going to do the job, you know, when they have to be out there that way. So, yeah, it's a good point that it could be a little bit worse in some other situations. Moving on down the line here, cornerbacks also spoke to the media. From the impressions that I got, Alexander Smith and Dean Ingram were really impressing as possibilities for that third cornerback position. Again, you're kind of looking at inside linebackers and corners. You've got two established starters that are really good. Of course, in the cornerback room, Fayon Hicks and Caesar Williams. But then you're looking for someone else to step up. I think the third cornerback in terms of third inside linebacker or third cornerback, which one's more pressing? I think third cornerback is very much a bigger deal, simply because Jim Leonard in his defense plays a lot of nickel. You're going to have three cornerbacks out there a large majority of the time. So I think that who's going to fill in that role is a key position to watch for across the board for Wisconsin football. But what did you make of the cornerbacks and their conversations?
Yeah, I think you look at kind of what they have, and for sure, Fayon Hicks has kind of taken over that leadership role, it sounds like. You've got Caesar Williams, another upperclassman to rely upon. Those are your definitive top two. But then, yeah, most of the conversation was about Smith and Ingram. Once again, you can kind of tell who is in that battle based off of who's available. Smith and Ingram available to talk to the media. So those are both younger guys. Smith's a little older. He's been on campus now going on 3 or 4 years and has seen some playing times, primarily on special teams, and then mixed in here or there. But Ingram is a kid that I think from the jump, since he's been on campus, has impressed and been a guy that they've gotten in even as a freshman. He was returning punts last year. So I think both those guys are very different players. Smith a little longer, you know, just a shade under 6 foot, whereas Ingram's about 5'8", and that might even be generous in a bit. So, or 5'8", 5'9". And so I think between those two guys, they have some some different matchups that they can use. I'm guessing Ingram would probably slide into the slot a little bit more, whereas Smith would probably stay outside and then Hicks would pop in. So I think the battle there for that job is going to be a really tight one. But really, when you look at how you mentioned Jim Leonard uses his cornerbacks a lot, they play nickel like three-fourths of the time anyways. You're going to have one of these guys is going to be a pseudo starter, and even you're going to probably be playing four corners quite a bit in general. I think that there's still a chance for a guy like Samar Melvin, Daron Harrell, if they get back healthy sooner rather than later, to mix things up a little bit, just because new cornerbacks coach Hank Poteet hasn't really seen what they can bring to the table. And we saw both of them play a lot of football so far. I mean, Melvin, it was just four games essentially, but he has started that Minnesota game and played really well at times. So I think there's still a lot to be determined, but it's really promising to hear Smith and Ingram's names as guys who have emerged. You wonder about a guy like Dante Burton, who was involved. He has played a bunch. He played a lot late in the last year. So I think there's still a lot to happen once the dust settled, but it's great to hear that those two are doing so well. And as guys who really came in as lower three-star recruits, mid three-star guys who were kind of flashing now as Wisconsin develops them.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think when you look at who you may be expected to take on this third cornerback role, Samar Melvin, Dante Burton could be a guy. You kind of, I don't know if I necessarily expected, Alexander Smith and Dean Ingram to be the guys that are really impressing. And that's not a knock on them. It's just we haven't seen as much from them, not as highly recruited like you mentioned. So when you look at it, the guys that you would expect to kind of make that jump, sometimes you get surprised by some others. And, of course, there's been some injuries there. And I like that you mentioned, that Hank Poteet hasn't got a chance to see him. So with the new position coach, you see what's out there. And when your guys are out there, other things could change when they get healthy. So I don't think anything is certainly set in stone, but it's nice to have maybe three, four guys that compete for one of those, that third corner, that nickel cornerback that's kind of like you said, a pseudo starter. But then after that, who's going to be maybe your fourth corner to work into rotation is just as important. Or if you need to get some more DBs on the field and in passing downs to be able to have another guy that you feel comfortable with is going to be really important. So, again, a lot of talent in this room. And I think they're maybe a little bit further along with some of these guys than some of the guys in the inside linebacker room, but still looking to see the next step from some of them. And it sounds like Alexander Smith and Dean Ingram are making their push, but I would not be surprised if some others, Daron Harrell, Dante Burton, Samar Melvin, when they're able to go, to make a push there as well. But I think that is going to what make this cornerback room so interesting is that you've got a lot of guys that can come in and compete for time. And two of these spots are really, again, already kind of set in stone. So you're not competing for a ton of snaps. But I think that should make the battle just as interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, moving on down the line here, tight end. There's been some reports of some guys, again, impressing. There have been reports of a lot of tight ends being used. Of course, again, you've got that established starter in Jake Ferguson, but some other guys playing well. Of course, our favorite, Jack Eschenbach, sounds like he's emerging as a pass-catching target. Jalen Franklin sounds like he's starting to develop and kind of make sense as to why they moved him to that position. You've also got some young guys in Rucci, Clay Cundiff, Cam Large, some of these younger guys. So what did you make of the tight end reports that have kind of emerged over the last few days and then in the last week?
Yeah, it seems like they're really trying to make a concerted effort to get some of these younger guys in and giving them reps, because you know what you have with Jake Ferguson. He's one of the better tight ends in the Big Ten coming back, and really he's established as one of your top receiving options, one of your best blocking options at the tight end position. So it's more about getting some of those other guys as many opportunities as possible to develop. And yeah, I mean, Jack Eschenbach is a podcast favorite. Mm-hmm. And I remember we brought his name up for a while now, much before he was even seeing the field. So he's a guy that I think will continue to be a threat. He's got really good size. He runs well. He keeps getting bigger. And it really has a receiver background. So those are skills you don't usually just lose overnight. So I think he's in a good spot to be a guy who can be out there as a pass catcher. But then Hayden Rucci, I still think, is probably your blocking tight end, is going to see a little bit more playing time than say, Eschenbach, just because of what he can do in blocking. I mean, most of his plays when he was out there were running game plays, so I'm hopeful that they can get him in the mix. I know he had a long reception in one of the practices that he brought up, so that he said that was exciting and great, so hopefully we see more of that. Doesn't need to be long chunk plays, but rather just getting him involved in the passing game so that teams can't key on that. But then, yeah, Jalen Franklin, he's a kid who athleticism and traits are through the roof. It's now about making sure he's healthy. I know he's been dealing with a hamstring injury, but getting him back out there, he practiced the first few practices, has been kind of off and on since then. So he's a kid that I think if they can use him split out a little bit as an H-back, that can also help add another wrinkle into this offense. We'll see if that happens this year or if that's more down the line. But he's a kid that as he gets more familiar with the terminology, everything that they're doing on offense, he could be a wild card. But and you haven't heard a bunch from some of the other young guys. You know, we haven't heard a bunch about Koldakovich. Haven't seen a bunch of Cam Large, anything like that. Like, they're on the field, they're practicing, but it's not really making huge splash plays. So based off of, once again, who's available to the media, as well as just what you're seeing in practice, it seems like Ferguson, Eschenbach, Rucci are kind of your top three. And then that fourth spot, which probably isn't going to get used quite as frequently, is the one kind of up for grabs that maybe a guy like Clay Cundiff would be vying for right now.
Yeah, it's so interesting with Wisconsin tight ends because they're all, you know, position-wise are under the tight end label, but Wisconsin does so many different things with that position, whether it be a guy that's primarily a pass catcher, a guy that's, you know, in there for blocking, you know, in there just to be an extension of the offensive line. So you've got an established, you've got, like you mentioned, one of the top tight ends really in the country in Jake Ferguson. He's going to be your pass catcher, and Jake has really developed, I think, as a blocker to be out there as a guy that can do them both, and I think that's key for Wisconsin to give them an added wrinkle to their offense that, you know, Jake Ferguson isn't in a situation anymore where he was, you know, early in his career he was coming out in those run heavy options and they didn't really have that added wrinkle. Now, you know, Ferguson has kind of developed into a guy that can do it all at that tight end position, which is what you want. And then you've got some, the other options. You know, Rucci is a guy that's going to be, when you're looking at Ferguson being a pass catcher first, Rucci's probably a blocker first, but if he can emerge and develop as a pass catcher too, that maybe gets you next in line in terms of, you know, who's going to be that next tight end. And I think that would be a really important development for him. And then, you know, a guy like Jack Eschenbach, who's big and long, put on a lot of weight and muscle. He's been a lot bigger these last couple of years than when we first kind of mentioned him, looking like a young, skinny deer out there. He's developed into a player that can, I think, you know, give you something in the passing game. And then Jalen Franklin, kind of that role that maybe will be a little bit more niche, you know, at that H-back position, I think could be really good. But it's an interesting position to keep an eye on for. You know, a couple of years ago, they were struggling to just find bodies to play there. It's crazy the turnaround that they've had since then in terms of depth and talent, but I'm interested to see how the rest of spring ball shakes out and how this position kind of develops into the fall.
Yeah, because there is plenty of playing time when you consider how Wisconsin likes to use two or three tight ends at a time in various situations. That gives you a pretty good opportunity to get on the field in a capacity. You're also used primarily in special teams on any field goal or punt situation. So a lot of these guys have things to go for, but really tight end is such a developmental situation and such a developmental position that it's going to take time for some of these guys. And there's a reason that we saw Jake Ferguson play as a redshirt freshman, but maybe not make huge leaps until a year after that. So they're getting into a situation where most of these guys in the tight end room haven't had spring practice, so this is really invaluable for them.
Yeah, I think that's a great point as you move forward with this group and see how they develop overall. All right, moving on down the line here. Any other notes from practice that you wanted to hit on before we've got a little bit of recruiting to touch on, and then we'll touch on some basketball here at the end.
I think the biggest thing was that you saw a flurry of tweets after practice pointing out two different players, and it was Chimray Dike and Graham Mertz, which I think is really exciting for fans, that they should be excited, because right now they're obviously not going full go. They're not having full pads with a line in front of them and everything. But at the same time, it's good to see them build a rapport with one another. That's in addition to the fact that you have your top two receiving targets back from a year ago in Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor. So I think that is something that could really give this offense a boost if they're clicking, because Chimray Dike has good length, good ability to work the middle of the field as well. So I think if we're seeing a nice jump from him, this offense could be a lot better. The other guy, Devin Chandler, his name has been brought up quite a bit. He caught a long pass from Wolf. So I think the fact that Graham Mertz is having a really good spring, the fact that Chimray Dike is having a really good spring is definitely something to get excited about, because this offense, especially given the fact that right now we have seen so many injuries at the running back position, working a walk-on there in Brady Shipper, you're probably going to have to pass the ball a little bit more than you traditionally would want to. Now, even considering the fact that you're probably going to have a fully healthy Jalen Berger come fall, but really to have a quarterback that you can trust and somebody who's kind of proving that, hey, maybe last year some of that was just rust after getting COVID, another full off season of development, I think Graham Mertz is making nice strides, and that's a positive development for this team.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking across spring practices around the country, you always want to hear about your quarterback developing well and getting a repertoire established with his receivers. And I think we all kind of expected, I think, a jump up, but it's nice to kind of have those convictions and hear that, you know, that is in fact happening. You know, I don't think anyone, at least myself, and I know you, were not a doubter of Graham Mertz in terms of ability. It was just more of last year, there were so many things going on. Again, we don't want to be Graham Mertz apologists, but there was a lot of tough things that most college quarterbacks up until last year didn't have to deal with, and unfortunately, everyone kind of had to deal with those odd situations, and injuries are always part of the game, but that makes a big difference. So it's nice to hear that he's kind of, you know, I think getting some confidence working with his receivers. The receivers and Chimray Dike and those guys are a really strong, established group, growing confidence that way. So in terms of an offense that last year really struggled to find themselves and get going, to hear that they're doing well and having a little confidence spark is always a good thing. And, yeah, like you mentioned, I think fans should be very excited about it. I know, you know, and I don't think anyone expected last year to continue into this year, but it's nice to hear that, you know, they're trending away from what the struggle was a year ago.
Yeah, and Jack Cohn leading the race there at Notre Dame is going to be interesting. That makes that juiciness of that Notre Dame-Wisconsin game a little higher, because you've got two quarterbacks that were in the same room and were really vying for a job against one another, probably going to go against each other in a really big game. So I think that's another fun little wrinkle that it throws into the spring.
Yeah, a late September battle between Graham Mertz and Jack Cohn is not something I would have envisioned a year ago when we were talking about spring practice and, you know, kind of being canceled last year. But it's been a crazy wild ride since then, and I certainly can't wait to possibly see that. All right, moving on down the line here, some recruiting news. In-state offensive lineman Barrett Nelson picked up an offer from the Badgers. If you recognize the Nelson name, of course, Jack Nelson is a player that right now is really standing out in the offensive line for Wisconsin. So you look across the roster, Wisconsin does a really good job of recruiting one brother and usually going after and having success landing the other one. But I think in terms of an offer for the Badgers going out, that's a pretty smart no-brainer when you see what Jack Nelson is doing. But what did you make of that offer being thrown out?
Yeah, I think it was just a matter of time for that offer to go out. He's a guy who could play on either side of the line. Probably going to end up on the offensive side of the ball if he commits to Wisconsin. I think in the end he's going to be there. He's probably going to look around. Most kids are waiting until they can get some official visits in just because they haven't been able to visit anywhere. He's got other offers from Iowa State, Nebraska, and Purdue, which I think kind of forced Wisconsin's hand because they were slow playing him somewhat, knowing that, hey, we probably can get this kid when we want him. But he's 6'6", 260 plus. He's going to get bigger. Another good athlete out of Stoughton, played football last year at Fall River. But really, I think when you look at this, he's probably going to get pick up some more offers from some higher schools than, say, Purdue. But he's a guy that older brothers plays for Wisconsin. Father played with at Wisconsin. I would have a hard time seeing the Badgers lose out on this one. And really, I think he's the type of prototypical offensive lineman that comes in a little leaner, bulks up, but has the frame to add weight and does well. So I think it could be really fun to see those two end up playing both guard positions, for example, together on the same line in the future if it comes to be that way and Jack stays inside or Barrett goes inside.
Yeah, I think that would be really an intriguing duo that they've got and hopefully can land. You know, Barrett, of course, not as highly recruited right now, but those things can change and skyrocket, especially when you see, you know, that his brother is having success and Barrett Nelson could, you know, absolutely develop into something similar. Of course, you know, a little bit lighter, but I don't worry about that in terms of if he's going to come in and be part of Wisconsin. He'll throw on that weight pretty quick, whatever side of the ball he ends up on, you know, whether it be on the offensive line or the defensive line that way. So you hope that Wisconsin can, continue to do well in terms of recruiting that younger sibling. You know, we talked about the Chenal brothers. You've got, of course, the Sanborn brothers. So if you can hopefully land, another in-state kid that is a brother of Jack Nelson and he develops into a similar talent, that's a home run slam dunk that Wisconsin's got to take. So I understand what they were doing in terms of waiting a little bit, but now the offer's on the table, and I'd have to imagine they think they can land a player like him, and hopefully he'll develop into, you know, another strong offensive lineman or defensive lineman that can really help them in the future.
For sure.
All right, moving on down the line here. Basketball, a little bit to talk about. Marcus, is it Liver? Iver?
Ilver.
Ilver. As you guys know, I'm bad with last names. Marcus Ilver was the last part of the signing day group for the class of 2021. So that group is now, of course, official. 6'8" power forward for him, 195. I know he's played overseas, spent a little bit of time with Sam Decker, who has raved about him. But now you've got this class, you know, all signed up. You know, you've got Chucky Hepburn, Matthew Morris, Chris Hodges, Marcus Ilver, and then you've got the two transfers in Jacoby Neath and Isaac Lindsay. So this group comes in, really kind of provides some things that Wisconsin's going to need in terms of the overall recruiting rankings, a national rank of 32, Big Ten rank of 5 now as you look at it. So certainly improvement. Previous year was 31 in terms of the national rank, so you're right around there. But what do you make of this group overall now that it's all signed and sealed and official?
I like the group. You look at it, you might as well add Jacoby Neath and Isaac Lindsay into this group just because the UW has now made it official, talked about those guys coming in. So six newcomers into this team, which I think should give. With Neath, you get some experience. Isaac Lindsay, you're getting a high upside kid who's coming off an injury that can help you out at the two guard. And then you look at it, Chris Hodges, he's more of a banger, something this team really needs. He's listed at like 6'8", 6'9", 240 or so. He should be able to help them out physicality-wise. And really, who knows where he's at height-wise now after really not playing at all this past year due to concerns with COVID. But I like how this group kind of forms together. I think Matthew Moores, Chucky Hepburn, both guys can shoot it. Same with Marcus Ilver, which I think this team desperately needs is some shooting touch. All three of those guys can deliver in that area. Hepburn's probably going to be a day one starter, at least I think. You could maybe Neath gets gets the nod and starts. But really, I would think that Hepburn is a kid who could come in and immediately be a starter from the jump and really be a good floor general that this team needs. But really, I'm excited about Matthew Moores and Chris Hodges the most out of this group. I think Hepburn is going to maybe be the best of the bunch, but I think Matthew Moores, he has just all the intangibles to help out and play the three or the four and can do all the little things in addition to shooting the ball. He reminds you of Joe Krabbenhoff as a guy from South Dakota. But maybe even just a really higher athlete. And then Hodges, I think just that physical presence should help this team out because you look at their other bigs and most of them are guys who can go inside out. And Hodges can do that, but he's got some size to him that you need to hope that he can become what Charlie Thomas wasn't able to do for the Badgers in play inside and be a bagger, maybe a Travion Williams type to help this team out. So overall, like the group, I like the upside of a guy like Ilver, but it's now going to be a matter of just how they develop when they get on campus because that's the biggest thing is specifically developing as shooters and rounding up their games and kind of making sure that they have players that can play the two a little bit because they're bringing in a lot of point guards, a lot of small forward through five types, but not as many shooting guards here or pure shooting guards that you would normally see. So I think that's the one spot that I would look to and say, hey, it would have been nice to maybe bring in a shooting guard. I know Isaac Lindsay is one, but he's a walk-on kid. So kind of looking for that two guard to emerge. But I know that Jonathan Davis can play that as well.
Yeah, I think that part, the variety of the class, you know, you went out and you've got a guy that can be an established starting point guard. You've got a Matthew Moores that can kind of do it all. You know, Hodges, you know, the roles are very well not defined for this team, but I think you can see how they project, you know, with Chris Hodges kind of being that inside force that you need. Ilver being a guy, you know, at 6'8", can kind of stretch the floor and shoot it a little bit. When you add in, yeah, the Jacoby Neath and Isaac Lindsay kind of being part of that class, you know, Lindsay has certainly got the capabilities to be a knockdown shooter as long as his health continues to get back to where he was. I know he's been dealing with injury and dealt with that at UNLV. Jacoby Neath, of course, brings you some experience and some depth at that guard position that's already played some collegiate basketball, which is always good when you've got guys on there that have played a little bit of basketball, ACC basketball. You know, I know Wake Forest is a team that struggled, but you're still playing against quality competition a lot of those nights in and out. So I think this group's got some special talent. I think if you're looking at a couple guys, the top three in Hepburn and Moores and Hodges, I think you could really be excited about. You know, Hepburn has already drawn a lot of excitement from Wisconsin fans, but I think Matthew Moores has a chance to be a guy that's really special. Just got a lot of development in his game. You know, one of those 6'7", 6'8", kids that really does well for Wisconsin. You know, I know he's a little bit smaller than the traditional bigs that Wisconsin's dominated with over the last few years, but I think Moores can be a guy that really does something special. And this group seems like they can be a group that hopefully gives Wisconsin some depth and some added playing time for this year, but it's going to be, like you mentioned, important to see how they develop and keep an eye on this group as they move forward at UW.
Yeah, it should be fun. Next year, this team probably won't be as talented, won't be as readily available to challenge for a Big Ten title like they came into this past year doing, but it should be fun to kind of see the growth and the different brand of basketball that this team could potentially play.
All right, guys, that pretty much wraps up our episode of the podcast. Thank you, as always, for listening. We'll be back with you later in the week, as always, on Wisconsin. Thank you.